voice with their mother's specific rhythm. This Moment of Science comes from Indiana University. Today's program was prepared by Eric Sonstrom, with help from Jackie Gillis-Light at Kalamazoo College. I'm Yael Cassander.
Support for today's broadcast comes from the licensed professionals at Body Therapy Shop, dedicated to helping clients relieve stress-induced muscle or joint pain with therapeutic massage, body work, and physical therapy services. Located in the Lincoln Square Village, Urbana, with more information on the web at bodytherapyshop.com.
In sports, NFL owners discuss playing spring preseason games as part of a possible expansion of the regular season schedule, but no action was taken as the owners wrapped up their meetings today, and no change in the regular season schedule is expected for 2009. Mike Hart's first NFL campaign has ended prematurely. The Indianapolis Colts placed the former Michigan running back on injured reserve today. The sixth-round draft pick hurt his right knee during Sunday's win over Baltimore. The National Thoroughbred Racing Association has announced the formation of the Safety and Integrity Alliance that could lead to a ban on steroids and the beginning of uniform medication rules. Former Wisconsin Governor Tommy Thompson has been chosen to oversee the group's efforts. The Dodgers will try to stave off elimination tonight when they host the Philadelphia Phillies in Game 5 of the National League Championship Series. Los Angeles is down 3-1 in the best-of-seven playoff series for the Senior Circuit pennant. The Chicago Blackhawks and Phoenix Coyotes face off tonight at the United Center. Former Pacers coach Rick Carlisle is returning to Indianapolis as the new coach of the Dallas Mavericks. He was fired two seasons ago, worked as an ESPN analyst for a year, and is making his return with the Mavericks for a preseason game tonight. The Bulls are off until Friday when they'll take on the Utah Jazz in an exhibition game in Champaign at the Assembly Hall. Chicago is still looking for its first preseason win after last night's loss to Minnesota dropped the team to 0-3. That's sports.
Programs on WILL AM are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting audiences to join the U of I Men's Glee Club on October 28th with a special performance by The Other Guys. More information is at KrannertCenter.com.
The Boeing strike continues. Contract negotiations between the company and the machinist union have stalled. Workers walked off the job 40 days ago, and since then financial turmoil has set in. Instead of weakening the strikers' resolve, the crisis seems to be bolstering it. From member station KUOW in Seattle, Ann Dornfeld has the story.
Sweet wood smoke pours from oil drum stoves as picketers wave at honking cars. Cash Conaway works in facilities here at Boeing's Everett, Washington plant.
Both my parents worked here, including their parents and their grandparents. And, you know, they all say the same thing. You got to stand your ground, fight for what you believe in and what's right.
The 27,000 striking machinists say what's right is a cut of the $13 billion in profit Boeing netted over the past 5 years. They want the company to stop outsourcing union jobs, keep its current health plan, and increase pensions. Connie Kelleher is spokeswoman for the Machinists Union District 751.
They have not had a pay raise in 4 years. While the cost of living has gone rampant and they've watched executives take 21% pay increases, you know, millions in bonuses, it's sort of the fight that all the workers in America are facing, that in this country, the top is taking everything.
Boeing spokesman Tim Healy says to move into new markets, the company needs to be able to send jobs overseas.
Absolutely. The company has been doing well, but the union's asking us fundamentally to change the way we do business, which would undermine our ability to be efficient and productive and competitive.
Back on the picket line, aircraft inspector Gary Johnson stands next to a snack tent hung with stockings and a wreath. Looks like it's Christmas already here.
Yeah, well, the people are saying let's hold the line until 09. Kind of a clue. Merry Christmas. We're willing to stay here through the holidays.
For NPR News, I'm Ann Dornfeld in Seattle.
Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson yesterday laid out more details of the government's financial rescue plan. Those details include restrictions on pay packages for executives whose companies take part in the government's bailout. NPR's Yuki Noguchi has this report on what is and is not affected by those limits.
Lehman Brothers CEO Richard Fuld pulled down about $400 million or so in the last 8 years of running his now bankrupt bank. Citigroup CEO Vikram Pandit has made about half that in total compensation since he took over just last year. Speaking yesterday, Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson tried to assure the public that the buck has stopped here. He said the billions of dollars the government's investing in financial institutions won't line the pockets of such executives.
Institutions that sell shares to the government will accept restrictions on executive compensation, including a clawback provision and a ban on golden parachutes during the period the Treasury holds equity issued through this program.
Clawing back money from executives who misbehave? No golden parachute? Sounds reasonable. But wait, here's Peter Morici, a professor at the University of Maryland.
The executive compensation provisions in the bailout bill are merely a fig leaf, a cover.
The law says, among other things, that compensation should meet, quote, appropriate standards. And it specifies there's no dough for top officers who, quote, take unnecessary and excessive risks with a company. But Morici says there are millions in bonuses, stock options, and other forms of compensation to be made in that vague language.
The language of the legislation is such that it can be easily circumvented.
Grafe Crystal is an expert on executive compensation who writes a blog on the subject. He points out that under the new law, companies will pay taxes on annual compensation that exceeds $500,000 instead of the current $1 million cap. Crystal says that's one of those things that sounds good, but actually hurts shareholders, which in this case will include taxpayers.
In effect, you're savaging the shareholders a second time, first by paying the excessive money, and secondly, by not being able to deduct it.
Even consultants hired by banks say this new law doesn't add much in the way of new restrictions. Jan Kors is managing director of Pearl Myers, a compensation consulting firm.
Will lowering that $1 million cap to $500,000 significantly change compensation? Probably not.
And let's say a banking executive were to screw up, or as the new law puts it, take unnecessary and excessive risks.
The act doesn't anywhere define what unnecessary and excessive risk is, nor does it define how that's going to be determined. So at this point, we have no idea what that means.
There was an effort early on to impose tough compensation limits on banks receiving bailout funds, but it never made it into the bill that became law. Professor Morici and blogger Grafe Crystal say many lawmakers lack the incentive to impose very tough new rules on the banks. After all, both parties depend on contributions from the industry to fund their campaigns. So, in the end, the new law isn't likely to alter the way banks pay their top dogs, compensation consultant Jan Kors.
They'll be paying their executives what they think they need to get them and keep them.
Yuki Noguchi, NPR News.
It's 2:48. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and in this portion of the program, we're going to talk about home movies, why they're important, and how to care for them. This Saturday, the Urbana Free Library, in partnership with the University of Illinois Library, will host Home Movie Day. We'll also talk about that in this portion of the program. The event runs from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Urbana Free Library, located at 210 West Green Street. Home Movie Days are held annually at many local venues around the world. Joining me to tell us more about these celebrations of home movies, Jimmy Jones. He is the project coordinator for the Audiovisual Self-Assessment Program in the Library's Conservation Unit. That's at the University of Illinois Library. Jimmy, thanks for coming in and talking with me.
Thanks
this
for
afternoon.
Having me.
So who do you hope will attend? Who do you want to encourage to attend on Saturday?
This is an event that's free and open to the public, and we're hoping that anyone can come. This is open to everybody of all ages. We're encouraging people to bring their home movies so that we can take a look at them and assess their condition and so forth, give them tips on how to preserve them, and also show them in our auditorium. The event is open to people who have films or people who don't have films but just want to drop in and see what kinds of stuff we're showing.
Okay. Now, does it matter if these films are 8mm, Super 8, or 16mm?
Nope. We'll be able to handle all three of the film gauges, so it doesn't matter what you have. We're encouraging people to bring film. I mean, this is a this is a film specific event, but we'll be able to show video duplicates of films. If you have DVDs of your old films and you don't have the film anymore, or VHS tapes or something like that.
Okay. Now, I imagine someone out there in the audience is saying, who wants to see my old home movies?
Well, you'd be surprised. I mean, every year we have people who drop in and just want to see, you know, they just want to take a walk down memory lane. You know, if it's just, this is an older person, they want to see, you know, what downtown Champaign looked like in the 50s, et cetera. And younger people like it, too. They like to see what the town looked like before that, before they were born.
Yeah, so it could be a great event for grandparents and
oh yeah, kids. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Now, in terms of coming across old home movies, maybe mm-hmm. we come across some and we don't want them or we can't keep them. Mm-hmm. What should we do with them?
Well, a lot of times people don't have the technology to play their old movies anymore, which is one of the reasons why we have gotten out the projectors, because we know that most of you don't have them. So we can get a chance to project them. A lot of people haven't seen their films in sometimes decades. If you don't want your films anymore, transfer them to video so that you can have access to that information is an excellent option. But the film itself, because film is so remarkably stable in terms of its aging process, it's still the most stable moving image capture medium that we know of and that we have. We recommend that people do not just transfer them to video and throw them away, because the film will actually probably outlive whatever you're transferring it to. So for the people that don't want to bother with, you know, the shoebox full of films, mm-hmm. hey, I put this on DVD, why do I need this anymore? I'm tired of tripping over it in the attic, et cetera. We recommend talking to archives about donation. And people tend to know about, well, yeah, if I have old photographs, I can donate them to the archives. If I have old letters and papers, et cetera. But home movies are excellent tools for historians, documentarians, and just plain people who want to see very real depictions, not Hollywood depictions, but very real records of communities in the past. So if you really want to see what an Edsel looked like, you don't have to find a Hollywood film. Sometimes you can go through these mm-hmm. old home movie collections and actually see what people, you know, how they lived and what kinds of homes they owned, et cetera, what the communities looked like. So they're very important historical recordings for archives. So if you don't want your films anymore, mm-hmm. consider donation. And at the event on Saturday, because it's going to be at Urbana Free Library, we have people from the Champaign County Archives who will be on hand to talk to people about, hey, if you want to donate your films, mm-hmm. if you're tired of tripping over these things, you already have them transferred to video, you don't want the film anymore, don't chuck them. Talk about rolling them into our collections.
Yeah. Now, you said that film is a very stable medium, mm-hmm. but yet we want to care for it.
Right.
Any tips here this afternoon about where we should store film,
sure.
how we should care for it?
Sure. A film is remarkably robust. Basically, you want to protect it from extremes. So extreme heat, extreme humidity, those are the things that will cause the film to age prematurely. So you don't want to store them in the basement. You don't want to store them in the attic. You don't want to put them out in the garage, which is unfortunately where a lot of people have these old dusty boxes of film.
Get them out of the way.
Bring them into an interior room of the house, an area where you're comfortable. So, you know, you keep the inside of your house comfortable and a pretty stable temperature and humidity all year round. Your film likes that also. So bringing it out of the attic, et cetera, will considerably lengthen the life of the film.
And we can watch them if we have projectors? We can watch them without fear of damaging them?
I wouldn't say that we can watch them without fear of damaging them.
Okay.
Film technology, particularly consumer film technology, is notoriously cranky. And films that have not been handled or stored well in the past may have shrunken. They may have the sprocket holes, little holes uh-huh. along the side of the film that carry the film through the projector. Some of those may be damaged. So projecting it yourself is really a risk that you're taking. And that's one of the reasons why we have, as part of Home Movie Day, an inspection station. So when you walk in with your box of films, before we throw them on a projector, we're going to take a look at them. We're going to spool through them and give you a sense of how the film is aging, how it's doing, and whether or not we can actually put them on the projector. Because again, since this is about film preservation, we don't want to damage your films
right,
in the process of telling you about taking care of your films. That would be kind of pointless. So that's the first step, is making sure that we can project it. Yeah. So doing it on your own is not something I necessarily recommend, unless you're very, very familiar with film technology and very familiar with your own films. If you haven't taken a look at them in 40 years, you get out the old projector that's very dusty.
Yeah.
Dust will probably scratch the film. The motor may not be working smoothly, et cetera. You're really taking your chances. And because home movies are one-of-a-kind documents, again, which is one of the reasons why they're so valuable, particularly to archives and historians, we want to really take care of them. Any damage that you do to that film, means information is going to be lost, and that information may not be able to be reclaimed. So another reason why we really want to take good care of these films.
Okay. With that in mind, if I have some old film and I'm thinking, gee, I'd like to get this transferred to another medium, is that complicated, and where do you find a reliable service to do that?
We will have the Home Movie Day, because it's an international annual festival. It happens all over the country and all over the world in different places. There is a main Home Movie Day website, homemovieday.com, easily enough. And on this site, you can see broken down by region of the United States and overseas lists of transfer facilities, people who are trained and can handle your film. There's, of course, always a little bit of a danger in shipping your materials, but that's kind of part and parcel with having it transferred.
That's life,
there are fewer and fewer transfer services that are at our fingertips. So my recommendation, and this is one of the things that we'll have there, is taking a look through that list, finding some different places that are close so you don't have to ship it real far. And there are several that are in Illinois. And then contacting them, getting the rates, talking to them about what kind of equipment they use, et cetera, and maybe looking at their websites to see if they have – and some transfer facilities will have this on their website – little videos of what – some examples of some of the work they've done before, so you can kind of compare the quality of the image. Granted, it's not entirely indicative because it's online, but – you can still get a sense of what your material is going to look like.
Yeah, and also at that website, www.homemovieday.com, you can find where events are happening anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
So if you're not in the Champaign-Urbana area but you'd like to take part, you might find an event in Bloomington Normal or Danville or Chicago, Milwaukee, whatever. So there we go.
Yep.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining me this afternoon.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for
having
me.
You're very welcome. Jimmy Jones, Project Coordinator for the Audiovisual Self-Assessment Program at the University of Illinois Libraries Conservation Unit. This Saturday, the Urbana Free Library, in partnership with the University of Illinois Library, will host a home movie day. The event will run from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Urbana Free Library, located at 210 West Green Street.
Earth and Sky.
It's called the Pierce Place, and it's been in the family for over 200 years, since 1785, when my great-great-great-grandfather came up here to Maine from Massachusetts and built the house there.
You're listening to Joe Pierce. He and his family own a 2,000-acre forest in Maine.
I'm very connected with the land, and I'm out there, and I'm making sure that I've got wildlife habitat, and I've got trees growing so that I can harvest.